Athletic.
Alright Reds, Tony Evans here with Walk On, your Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Well, what was that all about? I know it's been bad, but that wasn't Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool. There was a lack of fight, energy and effort. I mean, being beaten by City is one thing, because, let's face it, they've gathered one of the best squads ever seen. But to not match them for effort, to not match them for work rate, I mean, that's the least you can do, isn't it? Anyway, now on to Chelsea. We'll talk about all of that with James Pearce and Kiefer O'Neill. But first, I want to talk about those three words to sum up what happened at the Etihad. Ollie Campbell says, outfought, outplayed, outclassed. Niall McGrath says, April Fool's joke. Yeah, not very funny. John Wallace, football lesson given. Evie Allen-Jones, make it stop.
To join our community of listeners on Facebook, just search Walk On Podcast and join the group.
James, what was your thoughts on it?
I think I'd go for golf in class.
Kiva?
Feels like therapy, and I mean this podcast, because this season has been just not what we expected. So coming here and chatting to yous is almost like a healing process now for me.
Oh, well, the wounds are wide open, the wounds are wide open. I'd say, without going too far, end of era.
We were completely open. We were too passive, too deep, too far away from everything. We had, if you look at the game, I think we had around about four performances. We were okay. The two midfielders with Hendo and Fab worked a lot, tried to close gaps. Cody, especially in possession, and Ali, of course. So, and then that's obviously very difficult. If you want to get something from here, then you have to play 11 players, 14, 15 players have to be on top of their game. And it was not the case again. So after being 3-1 down, it didn't. It's anyway difficult to come back here, but we had a situation for the 3-2 maybe when broke through on the left side. But then apart from that, City could pretty much do what they wanted because the spaces were too big. And so we are rather lucky that they only scored one more. And that's it now.
Well, that was Jurgen Klopp after the match speaking in his press conference. And I listened to that and I'm like, did he watch the same game as me? You know, Hendo and Fab. What's that all about? James, is that delusional that they worked hard to close down spaces? I didn't see it.
I think it's certainly overly generous to... I mean, it was interesting in itself that it's rare for Klopp to kind of pick out certain players and absolve them from blame, especially when you've been on the back of such a chastening defeat when you've been found wanting in pretty much every single department. But yeah, I thought it was overly generous, certainly, to throw Henderson and Fabinho's names into the list of ones that could hold their heads high, because for me, Liverpool were overrun in that department, you know, outworked and, you know, outclassed. So, yeah, I think, you know, those were the words of a very dejected man, didn't they? I think from Klopp's press conference, you know, the thing that really, really struck me was right at the end, and I was at the Etihad, you know, the conversation turned to the Rodri incident at the back end of the first half where, you know, Klopp, I think, would have been more than entitled to say, well, you know, Rodri should have been off, it should have been a second yellow. Game was 1-1, you know, who knows what could have happened. But he said, you know, I'm not sure we would have even beaten 10 men today. You know, that was the brutal reality of it, because there was such a chasm between those teams during that, you know, hopelessly one-sided second half.
Yeah, I mean, getting beat at City, as I said, you know, it happens. I mean, yeah. In 2017, they lost 5-0 at the Etihad, and after winning the title, they lost 4-0 to City away. But it's the lead up to it. It's the culmination of something, this, isn't it? It feels like an exclamation mark on the season, or even worse, a full stop, Kiva.
Yeah, it just feels like they put in zero effort in that second half in particular. There was some fight in the first half. Salah's goal, obviously terrific. The only highlight of the day for Liverpool, I thought. And then the second half, it was just like watching watching them wait. We watch them wait for City to do whatever they wanted with the ball. And we know how good City are when they're in the when they're at their absolute best. They can just fizz the ball about the pitch and make any team in the world just not look good enough. And Liverpool definitely didn't look good enough. But I think a lot of that was down to them as well and not just City's excellence. I think they didn't give enough in terms of press and track. And it just felt like they just stopped. It was like they gave up. And that, I think, is the most worrying thing this season we've seen from Liverpool. Coming back to what Klopp said and picking out some players, he picked out Gakpo and I thought some of his touches were all right at times. But again, there was no player on the pitch that you looked to and thought, they're on their A game today, they look great. Maybe Salah for his finish and Jota for sort of slowing the ball down, whether how much he meant that. I think it's 30 appearances now, did they say, for Jota without a goal for Liverpool, which is... I mentioned on the last podcast that it was getting into worrying territory and I think now we should be worried maybe. I don't know, he'll start scoring again, won't he? But for Liverpool, it just felt like the performance this season that I think fans would be most disappointed at, given that one of the best performances this season was that 1-0 at Anfield against Manchester City and obviously the Community Shield as well at the start of the season, which done us all over, didn't it, into thinking Liverpool would be battling at the top, but obviously they're nowhere near where we thought they'd be.
You know, James, what got me, I'm going to single out two players. I'm going to single out Henderson and Alexander-Arnold for the second half. Right, the pair of them, giving it loads of finger-pointing and posturing. But if you're pulling your tripe out and you're giving it, you know, the maximum effort, you can do that. But neither of them look like that.
I think it was across the board. I didn't watch that second half and anyone in particular was glaringly a weak link for me. I just thought, they looked like a team, and it wasn't even really a surprise. That's probably the most, you know, kind of gut-wrenching thing about it, is because we've seen it so often this season that they just can't handle setbacks. That's the thing. That was a team that were in the game for 45 minutes. Yes, City were better. They were dominant. They had most of the ball. But Liverpool were reasonably resilient and well-organised, shut down space, posed a threat on the counter-attack. But again, like, you know, how do you start a second half that poorly? That's the thing for me. And yes, you know, neither of those players you mentioned totally covered themselves in glory. You know, there was...
But it's the finger pointing and the making a big show of it all that gets me.
To me, there's not enough finger pointing. There's not enough people taking responsibility. I wouldn't say that's a weakness. Yeah, of course, you've got to back it up with performances, but... There was an example, I think it was just before City's fourth goal, where Alexander-Arnold is pressing Edison on his own. And it looked like a complete waste of energy, almost looked around as if to say, well, where's everyone else? And it's like, that just shows how disjointed and what a mess that team was in that second half. The fact that they weren't in sync with each other, they weren't backing each other up, they weren't a cohesive unit. They were just a bunch of individuals who had alarmingly lost their way. And just going back to something you said before, Tony, yeah, Liverpool have had a couple of pastings at the Etihad previously in the Klopp era, but not like this. You go back to the 5-0, Sadio Mane was sent off, Liverpool were down to 10 men for, what was that, an hour? And then what was the other one? I think a 4-0 after Liverpool had already won the title, football was behind closed doors. You know, it was just an absolute pointless game, that one. But this was different. This was Liverpool going there after an international break, all that bullish talk about, you know, having time to reset, clear your head, go again, you know, massive effort now. This team always finished season strongly under Klopp. Yeah, there was nothing, was there? There was absolutely nothing during that second half.
I think the Alexander-Arnold moment was quite key for me when he was pressing there, because it reminded me of two things. One was Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, who comes on for Liverpool, obviously in this game, playing for Arsenal, but I think it was against Bayern Munich maybe, and he was pressing all over the pitch and none of his teammates were going with him, and he threw his arms up, and I think not long after he sort of left Arsenal, I felt like that was the moment where he kind of realised that, you know, this Arsenal team's not doing so great at the minute. And Alexander-Arnold showing the fight there, was it just felt like that moment where he was trying to rally in a similar way that Liverpool always have against Man City. And it reminded me as well of, obviously, Andy Robertson's famous sort of run around Anfield chasing the ball back against City a few seasons ago. But this Liverpool team don't have that fight in them anymore. When one goes, you know, they don't all go anymore. It just feels like they've just forgot how to play the game that they played so well for so long.
Like I say, in isolation, you go, oh, you have days like this. But, you know... Brentford 3-1 at Brentford, 3-0 at Brighton, 3-0 away at Wolves, 5-2 at home to Real Madrid, 1-0 away to Bournemouth. I mean, it's a succession of performances where they've not shown anywhere near the where they were under Klopp at the best. I mean, they've lost their identity completely, haven't they?
Yeah, I'd go along with that. That's why, you know, I've seen some people describe it as a new low in the season. I wouldn't go that far, actually, because I don't think it was anywhere near as bad as Wolves away or Brighton away. It was just in keeping with what we've seen. That was the thing for me. The fact that we almost saw the two faces to this Liverpool team this season in one day, really. The fact that, you know, there are occasions when they can dig deep, when they can be resilient, but they just can't sustain it. And, you know, we've seen them do it one week and then fall apart the next. And on Saturday, they saw them do it for half a game and then fall apart in the next 45. And I think a lot of it, yes, there's a lack of energy, there's a lack of legs, but it is also a mentality thing. There's no doubt it's a mentality thing because, you know, the away form is just pitiful, isn't it? You know, 12 points out of a possible 42, worse away record than Southampton or Leicester that are obviously right in the midst of a relegation scrap. And that comes down to them being so brittle away from the comfort blanket that is Anfield, where the home form puts them kind of top three in the Premier League, and the away form is, you know, bottom seven. It's so poor. And and that's the thing, that it almost wasn't a shock what we saw in that second half, because we've seen it time and time again. And, you know, the other thing that Klopp said that struck a tone with me was he said, you know, we were lucky that City weren't more greedy. And that, you know, that was 100% the case, because City effectively declared in that last 15 minutes. They looked like a team who just went, you know what, yeah, we're actually chasing a treble. We'll conserve a bit of energy. We'll save you any more embarrassment. And Liverpool actually looked like a team that were like, well, you know, we're happy now to just get away with a 4-1 defeat. And, you know, that shows you how far this team have fallen.
Yeah, they look like a relegation side, from mentality monsters to mentality midgets. How badly broken is it, Kiva? Is it fixable?
I think it is fixable, yeah. This summer feels massive, we know. We've been chatting about that as well. But it does kind of concern you that this sort of job of rebuilding hasn't slowly but surely been going on. It just feels like everything's dependent on this summer to fix the problems that Liverpool have currently. And look, if Liverpool had, you know, been battling for the title or won at least one trophy this season or top four just looked, you know, a dead cert, this conversation would be very different, I think, heading into the summer. We know Liverpool would like Jude Bellingham, fans would absolutely love him. But the conversation, I think, would be different if had Liverpool been playing better football. But now it just feels like such a negative time, doesn't it? And watching that game yesterday, I was kind of thinking, you know, Andy had written a piece recently on sort of like, you know, who's safe from Liverpool's rebuild. And I was kind of looking on the pitch thinking, when you're sort of in that height of emotion and that feeling, you're looking thinking, well, who is? You know, it just feels like a lot of the time, it just, you do wonder just how much work Liverpool have given themselves this summer now, because they've got to, you know, move some players on and get some players in, and it's just a massive task and they have to do it. Like, FSG have got to do everything in the power because Liverpool are just slipping, and you can see that from yesterday. And like James says, it's not the most worrying performance this season because it's Man City, they can beat any team that they want, but it's just the nature of it. I just think it felt different, didn't it?
Yeah. This is Walk On, brought to you by The Athletic. Tony Evans here with James Pearce and Kiva O'Neill with Walk On from The Athletic. Well, the summer rebuild. Is there enough money? Are there enough players? I don't think there is. I really don't. I don't see how you can turn this thing round over the course of one summer, James. I really don't.
I don't know. I think you've got to be careful because Kiva's right. You know, emotions are obviously heightened off the back of a chastening defeat like that, because you can only do so much in one window. And I think you also have to be careful not to, you know, let's not go overboard. You know, the idea that Liverpool need to just like get rid of everything and start all over, that's not the case. Yes, a lot of players in that dressing room have underachieved this season, but there are players there who are either have got enough credit in the bank and have done so much for the club previously that you'd back them to get back to their best. in the same way as you'd back Klopp to get back to doing what he did best in terms of getting the absolute best out of people. I think there's other players who are still learning their trade, who are young, you know, raw, and that they deserve to be persevered with. So you do have to be careful. And also, you know, the idea that you can get rid of 7 or 8 and bring 7 or 8 in one window and that fixes it. You know, you only have to look down to who Liverpool are facing on Tuesday night to see the issues there when you try and change too much too soon, because, you know, Chelsea are obviously in an absolute mess themselves, despite, what is it, spending 650 million quid in the last 12 months. So I always think with football, like, you're never as far away as you think. When you're in a rut, it feels like there's this massive, massive mountain to climb. But I don't know. I still think 3-4 quality, you know, new arrivals in the summer, rebuild that midfield. I just think the whole team functions better. And, you know, certainly at the top end of the pitch with the attacking options Klopp has got, you certainly wouldn't be saying that. We're not talking about a complete rebuild. We're talking about a midfield rebuild for me. And, you know, you need an injection of steel in that back line because, you know, repeatedly Liverpool have looked vulnerable there.
You know, I'm going to disagree with you, James, for the simple reason is there's 4 or 5 players there that any team in the Premier League, even Manchester City, would take. Right. The problem is everyone's worked out the system. Everyone's stopping the fullbacks, getting forwards. If they continue doing the same thing over and over again, isn't that the definition of madness, doing the same thing and the same results? This system isn't going to work. The blueprint's gone. It's burned. So what does Klopp do next? How can he make it work? I'm seeing not a single sign. You know, Trent is in a real trough because people are doubling up on him. They're exploiting the space behind him. They're causing him all sorts of problems. He isn't getting enough help from midfield. That's fair enough. But they have limited his effectiveness and they've limited Andy Robertson's effectiveness. The crosses have dried up. So what you need to do as a manager is find a way of getting the best out of these players and repeatedly banging our heads against a brick wall. We're not seeing any move to get the best out of these players. I mean, am I overreacting, Kiva?
I think a lot of fans will feel the same as you, definitely. And I think, like, the height of emotions following that game is making people feel similar. I do think had Liverpool, I know I keep saying, had they won and things like that, but it has felt good at times this season on the back of big wins, and particularly that one against City. We know that this team have still got it in them. It just does feel that there are a few players maybe away, a bit of a refresh, new energy into the team would help. I think yesterday one of the points that I think frustrated a lot of people, and myself included, left me scratching my head was, I think, Klopp waiting until about 70 minutes to bring however many changes on. It just felt like the game needed it sooner, maybe in response to City's early goal in that second half, you know, something to change. I think sometimes he sort of stands and watches and waits for something to happen from his players, but it's not always happening. I think he's got to be a bit more direct at times with his substitutions this season. I don't think have paid off in the way that they used to. You know, we used to see Liverpool bring Origi on, he'll score a late goal and that kind of thing. That second half, it was just us all watching Man City pass the ball around. That was, I think, probably humiliating for this Liverpool team, given they battled City so hard in the past few seasons. I think this one will hurt them because of that. You mentioned it yourself, Tony, an end of an era. And I think people are hoping that it's not one. But the more I see from this Liverpool team, the more I'm thinking, I think it's an end of one era. That doesn't mean it can't transform and change and moving into the new season next season, which, can we just fast forward to that, please? But it doesn't mean that, you know, it can't all quickly come together. Like James says, you're never too far away from something good in football, and I guess something bad as well. So I think for Liverpool, I hope will remain that can happen.
Yeah, I don't go along with the idea that the system's been found out. I think teams have known how to stop Liverpool for years and years and years. Like the blueprint has been there. The problem is Liverpool have been so good that teams haven't been able to stop them. So I don't go along with the idea that it's gone stale and it's, you know, it's too obvious or anything like that. Because as we saw against Manchester United, when it works, when you play with that energy, that intensity, that tempo, that aggression, you can't stop it. The problem is all those things have been lacking for so much of the season, for all the factors we've talked about, you know, on previous pods, from the injuries to the pre-season the demands of last season, to, you know, the mental effects of missing out and everything else, and lack of investment, yes, is an issue as well. And so that's going to be the interesting thing for me. And in terms of this summer, how does Klopp evolve things? Because yes, Liverpool rely on their fullbacks a lot for creativity, but he has consistently tweaked things over his tenure. I don't think it's fair to say they've just got one way of playing and that's it. If any, you know, I actually, it will get lost in the aftermath, but I actually thought, especially first half, it worked really well on Saturday, playing Salah more centrally. You know, one complaint from fans this season is we've seen Salah, you know, too much stuck out on that right flank, a bit too isolated at times, not in areas where he can really hurt teams. Yet, you know, with City's high line and his pace and his strength to hold off defenders, it worked well. And if he'd been able to put that ball into Jota on that counter-attack, you know, when Liverpool could have been 2-0 up, who knows? But it's, you know, it's all ifs and buts and maybes now.
That was a big sliding doors moment, wasn't it?
Yeah, because what was it? You know, Grealish back there, you know, of all people, you wouldn't expect Grealish to be back there making a crucial interception. And then, you know, it could only have been seconds, couldn't it, down the other end.
I think it was a minute, wasn't it? Exactly.
Yeah, laying on the ball for Alvarez. So, yes, Liverpool do need to evolve. There's no doubt about that. But I don't think it's a case of they've just been found out and they need to just kind of start all over again. I think they will carry a very different threat next season, just because it'll be almost a completely new look midfield. You know, you go back to when they brought Thiago in. One of the attractions of signing Thiago was that he was a very different type of midfielder and he would ask different questions. He would give them some kind of creativity and threat through the middle, which, you know, to a degree, you know, he's a beautiful footballer to watch, Thiago. The problem has been in the last few years, he's missed so much football. So yeah, the team will have a different shape to it and a different tactical base, I think, next season, but it's not a case of ripping it up and starting again for me.
Yeah, but this is a system that's, you know, he's developed and built across clubs that he's been at. So it's almost like you work and study for years and you get your PhD. You don't just rip it up and start a new job, do you? Or, you know, maybe you start studying again. But, you know, you learn new things then, but you still stick to what you know and your foundation. For Klopp, I think that team have everything instilled in them from him. And it does just need that refresh, doesn't it? And I think getting to the end of this season, if Liverpool can pull off some magical, mystical comeback to get top four, which just with every passing week feels so much more unlikely, then that'll be great. But whatever happens, it's all on next season now, isn't it? So, as I said before, can we fast forward?
For me, the problem is that, yes, you do stick with what you know, and you do, if you have something that is continuing to work, you know, you're going to do it in the end. But all of a sudden, it looks as if the way they're playing, the shape they're playing, isn't getting the best out of the players, particularly in Alexander-Arnold's situation. And let's face it, almost any team in the world to take him on, for all, you know, the criticism this year, he has such a range of abilities, it's untrue. But what you've got to do, you've got to find a way of getting the best out of players. And at the moment, Klopp isn't. And no one will deny, well, very few people will deny, there will be people who will be wanting them out, because there always are, and people are hysterical. But I don't think anyone should deny him the right to oversee a rebuild. But I am concerned, James, that the scale of what's needed to be done in the summer is beyond the spending powers of Fenway, and the number of players that are needed makes next year already looking like an uphill struggle.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the minute, we don't know, do we, in terms of what are Fenway prepared to put in? That's the unknown. Again, I was there on Friday at Kirby listening to Klopp saying, you know, we will spend 100% in the summer, you know, there will be changes. But, you know, it was interesting. He wouldn't be drawn on. He was asked, can you seriously see Liverpool signing someone for £100 million? And I think, you know, one of those ones where he thought, well, I know, you know, it's obvious what this is referring to. If I say yes, you know, Liverpool are prepared to pay what it takes to get Bellingham. If it's a no, it's almost like, well, you know that you got no chance of getting Bellingham because he isn't leaving Dortmund for less than £100 million. And he just swerved it and said, you know, I'm not going to answer that. But that's the thing, you know, Liverpool spend every summer, don't they? I think people, you know, get excited about, you know, when he says, you know, we've had positive talks and there's a lot going on behind the scenes. But will it be enough? Is it going to be at the kind of level that Liverpool need to put them back up there? And yeah, you know, I think, you know, they need three midfielders, definitely another elite centre-back, probably another fullback to provide cover for Trent, unless they really think that, you know, Calvin Ramsey, after a season of injury when we've barely seen him, whether they think, you know, he can really step up next year. But that's a big ask in terms of how much football he's missed. So there's a lot to be done. You know, you're talking about 200 million plus, aren't you, I think, in terms of what it's going to take. And yeah, will there be that money there? Will Liverpool be able to get and attract who they want? Because that's another thing, you know, in terms of, yes, of course, the pulling power of the club is huge. And, you know, we saw with Manchester United and Arsenal that clubs outside of the Champions League can still attract big players if you pay enough money. But at the minute, players, I'm sure, would be looking at it and thinking, you know, how convinced are they that, you know, this summer will enable Liverpool to then become challengers again next season? Or are they joining a club that's going to take a couple of years to get out of where they're at? You know, that will be what a lot of those elite players who Liverpool are speaking to will be thinking at the moment.
I think Liverpool's still attractive proposition for any player, especially young players, and playing under Jurgen Klopp, playing at Anfield, playing alongside Van Dijk, Mo Salah. You know, you can keep reeling off names of incredible players that are, you'd want to play it alongside. Just because Liverpool aren't playing well now, might not be playing Champions League football. I think you come for the project Klopp 2.0 or whatever you want to call it. This is going to happen next season. I think Liverpool are still an attractive club to sign for and always will be. So I don't think players will be put off by this season or watching, you know, Jude Bellingham himself losing yesterday to Bayern Munich. I don't think he'd be looking, checking the fixtures and going, oh, Man City have won, better sign for them. I don't think players think in that way in terms of that. And I guess as well, money's never been something in my life that I've gone, you know, I really want more money, I'm going to do that for more. You know, I don't think everyone thinks and feels that way, and I hope they don't, because that's pretty sad. Money's great and all, but it can't buy happiness, can it? It can't buy life, as I think Bob Marley said. So come to Liverpool and enjoy your life, hopefully.
This is Walk On, brought to you by The Athletic.
We're sponsored for this episode of Walk On by LinkedIn, so it's only right that we crowbar in a reference to Liverpool's super slick recruitment process while we talk them up. Because when you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. And that's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like Arnie Slot, probably. In any given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. In fact, on LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. So hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/walk. That's LinkedIn.com/walk to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, I think it's been tough for him because he's had some niggling injuries and, you know, noise and speculation off the pitch. But he's a professional and he's a top professional and he's a fantastic lad. So how he's acted with me, how he's acted with the team, how he's acted around us has been absolutely top. And I think that's credit to him because sometimes in your career, you know, things are difficult. They're not quite optimal that you'd like them to be. And then you have to act well and conduct yourself in a good way, and that's exactly what he's done.
This is Walk On from The Athletic with me, Tony Evans, James Pearce and Kiefer O'Neill. And that was Graham Potter speaking about Mason Mount before their loss at home to Aston Villa on Saturday. Well, what do you make of that, James?
Well, for a start, there's definitely something in it. It's, you know, sometimes with these ones, you know, I must admit, when it first came up a couple of months ago, I was a bit sceptical because I think we've seen it time and time again where, you know, a player is in contract negotiations with a club and suddenly interest from elsewhere is talked about and quite often it's used as a bargaining chip to get them a better deal where they are and they end up staying put. I remember, you know, actually going back a few years now to near the start of Klopp's reign when Liverpool's interest got used a bit with Ben Chilwell when they were trying to buy him at one point. But yeah, with the Mount one, from certainly the people I've spoken to, the interest is genuine. And I think the other thing is that Chelsea have certainly, I think, reached a point where they almost are resigned to losing him this summer You know, he's down to his final year. They haven't been able to agree an extension. I think Mason Mount has probably seen all those players arrive at Chelsea and thought, well, hang on a minute, you know, where exactly do I fit into all of this? And yeah, Liverpool aren't the only top club in. There's obviously some serious interest as well from Bayern Munich, amongst others. You know, of course, Tuchel and Mount got on well when they were together at Stamford Bridge. But yeah, it's one that makes sense for me. I think in terms of his skill set, his age, his versatility, he's only 24, I think he is. But, you know, he's got a lot of experience at the top level already. He's also homegrown, which is important in terms of meeting the quota going forward. The one thing that lots of the guys at The Athletic did, we did a joint piece together this week on Mount's situation. And the one thing that jumped out at me was Chelsea saying they want a minimum £70 million for him. Now, I know there's always a bit of clubs are always going to aim for the top and probably take a bit less. But for me, that's a crazy figure for someone who's only got 1 year left on his deal. And I certainly couldn't see Liverpool going that high for him.
The other thing that bothers me, and I've seen a fair bit of him, I'm not entirely sure where he fits in to the Liverpool setup. He's another one of those players, and we've talked about it before on the pod, players who you're not quite sure where the best position is. You know, what do they do? Is he a number 10? Is he a forwards? Is he... Yeah, he doesn't strike me as a midfielder in the templates of the most successful midfielders in the Klopp era.
I think that's the question mark around him, is where he will fit into this Liverpool team, like actually on the pitch. But the more I'm thinking about Mason Mount, and when he was first linked to Liverpool, it kind of felt a bit odd. Like, he's so Chelsea, like, how could he come to Liverpool? But I think the more you think about it, the more it sort of is making sense, and I'm getting sold on it a little bit. I think having someone who can offer just more attacking nature going forward, and, you know, getting in on goals, we've seen him be so integral to some of the best football Chelsea have played in recent seasons. He's been the one who's driven them forward and led that fight at times. I think it almost feels like his time at Chelsea now, like he can't do much more. You know, he's someone who's come through the academy. He's won the European Cup, the Club World Cup, the Super Cup, played in all of them FA Cup finals. I think it was a 3 on the bounce that they lost, obviously culminating in Liverpool beating them last season. I think it's almost like he's got to a point where obviously his contract's coming to dwindling down, and it's kind of like Chelsea are signing all these other stars around him. Maybe it is time that he moves to, you know, a similar team, and then Liverpool might get him actually in at the best time, because he's 24 and will be heading into those peak years of his career, you'd like to think.
Yeah, I'm a bit more sceptical than you, Kiva. I'm not entirely sure. I think the system would need to change significantly to get the best out of him. James, going to Chelsea, what can we expect there? I mean, you know, it's good to go. You know, we've got a bottom half team up next. You know, maybe we can get ourselves back on track. But how do you see it going?
Well, I think the problem with Liverpool this season is, what do you expect? Like, you can't bank on anything, can you? You don't even know what you're going to get from one half of football to the next, let alone from one game to the next. And the same with Chelsea, really, in terms of despite things having not worked for Potter at Chelsea, we forget in terms of like team unity or cohesion or anything, just in terms of individual quality, Chelsea have got the ability to beat you, because, you know, you look at some of the names on that team sheet, they're capable of producing something out of nothing, especially against a team who have looked so vulnerable on their travels as Liverpool. The flip side of that is, if you're Klopp and Pep Linders, you know, of all the places to go to at the moment, it's probably not a bad game for Liverpool in terms of, you know, you heard, you know, everyone who heard the boos ringing around Stamford Bridge on Saturday night. There's a lot of unrest, but yeah, it's huge for Liverpool, and that's the thing, because with such a quick turnaround and with this team being so brittle and not handling setbacks, it's a case of forget tactical plans and training ground stuff. It's more for Klopp and Linders. It's more about getting into their heads in terms of trying to provoke a response. And maybe part of that was Klopp on Saturday, you know, only sparing 4 players from blame. Maybe he wants to see a bit of fire in the belly and a bit of anger in terms of, you know, that kind of I'll show you mentality that we haven't seen enough of with Liverpool. So, yeah, what happened at the Etihad was a disastrous start to a big week. But you do have to say, you know, when you were looking at where Liverpool can pick up enough points to make a late push for those top four spots, which, yeah, feels like a distant dream at the minute. You wouldn't have had City away as down for anything realistically, you know, maybe a point at absolute best, but it means there's much more pressure now on going to Stamford Bridge and not only going there and getting something. I think you've got to go there and win.
Kiva, is the best thing you could do is just put the Champions League next year out their heads and just say one game at a time, because, you know, a significant reboot's needed now, isn't it?
Well, it'll get to the point where that's out of the control if they keep losing games anyway. You know, they'll have to give up on it and, you know, be chasing the Europa League or the Europa Conference League and be playing on a Thursday night. So I think for Liverpool, like James mentioned there, you know, when we did our predictions in that piece earlier last week, you know, I put an L next to Man City and Arsenal, and I did a draw for Chelsea because I just see the game maybe going in a similar way to the one at Anfield after all the talk and all the hype, and then, you know, it's sort of no team were good enough to win it on the day. And I think this, you know, game could be similar to that, but I think you've kind of got to get these three games out the way and then focus on the last nine games. I think they're going to be pivotal to whatever happens for Liverpool. And whether, you know, losing 9 points or, you know, 6 out of 9 or whatever it is, whether that then puts Liverpool so far back from Newcastle and Tottenham, then, you know, that likely is a thing. But I think you've got to kind of get past this tough 9-day spell and just see where Liverpool are at the end of it, how much they've got left in the tank, what they can give. But I do think it is probably a weird position for the players to be in, and the fans as well, because this time last year, Liverpool were fighting on all fronts. He'd already won the League Cup. They were about to go on and reach the Champions League final, reach the FA Cup final, take the Premier League title to the last day. They were doing all of this. So the players and the fans have now had to adapt where, you know, there's nothing really left to fight for other than the Champions League. Maybe that's not something almost like big enough, because it's not something like, I don't know, it just feels like it's never really felt there all season. Liverpool have never really, has there been any point other than those back-to-back wins against Everton and Newcastle where it was like, okay, this could maybe happen. It's never really felt in reaching distance, and I think in touching distance, and I feel like it still feels like that now. So maybe a win against Chelsea puts Liverpool in a better place going into the Arsenal game. I don't know, but it just feels like the season is, it's just dwindling out, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it feels like they've been knocked down and the only thing they can do is get up, take one step at a time. Anyway, that's all from Walk On, your Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Thanks to James and Kiva, and you as well for joining us. If you want to get in touch with us with questions, comments, or just to vent, remember to email us at walk-on@theathletic.com. We'll be back on Thursday, and we'll see you then.
The Athletic.